Just as a footnote to last week's talk, we mentioned last week the explanation that Rabbi Chanan Wasserman gave to the comment that the Gemara makes. Why is one obligated? What is the binding force of the Din Derabbanan? So the one opinion in the Talmud that was followed by the Rambam was that all of the Dinim Derabbanan are binding based on the Pasuk Lo Yisosur. That it says in the Torah, if you have a doubt as to what the Dini HaTorah are, you should ask the Chachamim, ask the Sanhedrin, and whatever they paskin is binding. So the Rambam understood, like the first opinion in the Talmud, that this Pasuk even applies to Dinim Derabbanan, not only when you have a Sofik regarding the nature of a Din Deraisa, even if the Chachamim are inventing a new Din Yesh Meyayin, that's also binding based on that Pasuk. And the Ramban thought that the generally accepted opinion was the second view in the Talmud, that it's not based on the Pasuk Lo Yisosur. Lo Yisosur only applies when you have a question regarding a Din Deraisa. But the Dinim Derabbanan are binding based on the other Pasuk, that Shal Avicha V'Yagedcha Zikeinecha V'Yomeloch. So Rabbi Chanan Wasserman quoted the commentaries on the Gemara who discussed this Pasuk. That has nothing to do with anything. The Pasuk says, ask your parents what happened in Jewish history. That Pasuk is not counted as one of the Taryag Mitzvah HaTorah. So how can that Pasuk be the source that all the Dinim Derabbanan are binding? So Rabbi Chanan Wasserman gave his whole explanation in the Sefer Divrei Sofrim, where he speaks about the nature of Torah Shebaal Peh and the relationship between Torah Shebichsav and Torah Shebaal Peh. Has a long, long essay. So part of that essay, he explains this, that all of the Dinim Derabbanan are binding because the Chachamim understood that this is really the wish of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the direction that he wants you to go. And even though he didn't command us explicitly to do this specific action, but we know from the Chachamim who have a perspective of Torah that this would kivayochel make HaKadosh Baruch Hu happy, this would please him, so therefore we're obligated to do it. So we spoke a little bit about the letter of the law and the spirit of the law. So just in connection with that, there's a famous comment that the Rabbeinu Nissim has. Rabbeinu Nissim was one of the Rishonim. He's known as the Ran. So the Rabbeinu Nissim has a collection of drushes, known as the Drushes HaRan. Very famous Drushes HaRan. So the Ran has a drusha in connection with yesterday's Sedra. The Chachamim and the Medrash and the Talmud consider the Akedah the greatest of all of the ten Nisyonos of Avraham Avinu. So many commentaries wonder what was the great Nisayon of the Akedah. We had 6 million Jews who were killed by the Nazis. Many of them gave up their lives b'ratzon, and throughout all the years they didn't have a choice. The Nazis didn't give them a choice. But during the period of the Crusaders, during the period of the Crusades, the Jews were given a choice, either to convert to Christianity or to give up their lives, and most of them gave up their lives. Many of them gave up their lives. So out of all the generations, Jews gave up their lives al Kiddush Hashem. So what was the big tzimis about Avraham Avinu, that he was prepared to bring his son on the Akedah and bring killing your children is a greater nisayon than giving up your own life? During the times of the Crusaders, they killed their children also to prevent them from converting. So that's a big question that many Mefarshim discuss. So the Rabbeinu Nissim comes up with a very original interpretation. He claims that this is Pashup Shat in the sixth drusha. He only has 13 or 14 drushas in Gansan that are printed here. In the middle of the drusha shishi, he has a comment, a famous comment that's quoted by later commentaries. He claims that when Hashem appeared to Avraham Avinu and he said, Kach no as bincha sechit hosher after asitzcha, Kach no means please. Ein no ala loshon bakosha. And it means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu appeared to Avraham Avinu and he said, look, could you do me a favor? I'm not asking if you don't want to do it, you don't have to do it. But I promised you that B'Yitzchak Yikar L'Chazera, that Yitzchak is going to be the future of the Jewish people, and so on. But you would really be doing me a big favor if you would bring him as a carbon. And if you say no, it was also okay. He didn't really command him. He just said that this would please him very much. So that was the great nisayon of Avraham Avinu, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't command him. He just saw that this was the wish of God, so to give up your son's life in order to satisfy God, when God said himself that if you don't want to, you don't have to. He just said that you would be doing me a favor. So he claims that that was the gist of the Akedah. Okay, this is a famous comment that's discussed by later commentaries.
What about, in that case, he was over here on Pikuach Nefesh Doch HaKolot Torah Kulas. Did you say that we have the
I mean, no, Ritzicha is one of the Sheva Mitzvahs B'nai Ne'achol, so you're not allowed to murder anybody. So that's a question. If God asks me, do me a favor and kill someone, are you allowed to? So his assumption is that you're allowed to. That God's wish would also take off the Isra of Ritzicha. Not only God's commands, God's wish would also take off. Yeah, okay. That was just a footnote to last week's talk. Okay. We left off last week, as every week, in the middle. So we left off with the Rambam, and we're going to have to explain this a bit. The Rambam claims that there are three categories of areas of Torah Shebaal Peh. Three different categories with respect to the principle of a later Bezdin choosing to paskin differently from an earlier Bezdin. So the Rambam writes, the Rambam divided all of Torah Shebaal Peh into five categories. So the third, the fourth, and the fifth are what we're going to discuss now. So the Rambam writes in the third category of the Torah Shebaal Peh, as he has it in the Hakdamah to the Pirush HaMishnayos, that's when the Chachamim were darshaning in the Midrash HaTorah Nedreshes Bem. So he says, in every generation the Chachamim can darshan the way they see fit, even if it's in total disagreement with what came in an earlier generation, and even if they don't think that they are greater scholars than the earlier Chachamim. There's no need for Gedolim Chachma V'Minyan, that the Pasuk says in Chumash, you should come to the judge who lives in your generation, Ela Shofet HaShiyah B'Yamim HaHem. So the Gemara comments, the Rambam quotes the passage from the Gemara, how Shofet HaShiyah B'Yamim HaHem. Of course, he can't ask the Vilna Gaon, he's in the cemetery. He can't ask Rav Chaim Oizer, can't ask the Chafetz Chaim, they're not alive. You have no choice. You have to ask the Chachamim who are alive in your generation. So what does it mean, Ovos Ela Shofet HaShiyah B'Yamim HaHem? It means even if you know that the rabbis in your generation are not as great scholars as those in earlier generations, and they tell you their opinion, and they tell you that they're disagreeing with the scholars who lived earlier who are greater than them. They're telling you they're disagreeing with the Chasam Sofer, and they're disagreeing with the Vilna Gaon, but Moshe Feinstein did many times. So the Torah says you have to listen to the Rabbanim in your generation. So that's the first category the Rambam says. Then the Rambam had the fourth and the fifth categories of the Torah Shebaal Peh with Dinim de Rabbanon. So he said the two categories that are the Rabbanim's, one was Gzeiris, one was Takonis. So the Rambam says, Gzeira means Alois Esei de Rabbanon, just like the mitzvahs in the Torah are divided into mitzvahs Esei, mitzvahs Lois Esei, so too the Dinim de Rabbanon are divided into two categories. One is like the mitzvahs Lois Esei, the Chachamim say, you're not allowed to carry in a Karmelis, lest you'll carry in a Rishus HaRabma. You're not permitted to write with your left hand on Shabbos, lest you write with your right hand. So these are Gzeiras de Rabbanon. So in the category of Gzeiras de Rabbanon, the Rambam claims, we're going to have to discuss all of these, where the Rambam got any of this from. The Rambam claims that if a later Bezdin and a later generation wants to reverse the Psak of the earlier Bezdin, they are not able to, even if they are greater B'chachma V'minyan, even if they're greater scholars than the earlier Bezdin. And in the fifth category of the Torah Shebaal Peh, namely in the area of Takonis, the mitzvah Esei Midrabbanon, for example, the Bezdin instituted Mikra Megillah Midrabbanon, the Bezdin instituted the Hadlokas Neiros Chanukah, when they instituted Takonis de Rabbanon, not Gzeira de Rabbanon, so that is governed with the rule, Ein Bezdin, the Mishnah says, Ein Bezdin Yochel Levatel, Dibre Bezdin Chaveira, a later Bezdin cannot abolish an enactment that was instituted by an earlier Bezdin, Elen Kein Gadol Hamen B'Chochma V'Minyan. We require that the later Bezdin should be greater in number of scholars, greater B'Minyan. If the earlier Bezdin instituted a Takana with a collection, with a gathering of 100 scholars, and the later Bezdin has 120, so that's greater B'Minyan, and greater B'Chochma, they should be more learned. That's greater B'Minyan is easy to count, how many people there were when they took the vote. Greater B'Chochma is sometimes not so easy. Sometimes it's clear and sometimes not so clear. So the Rambam says the din in the Mishnah that a later Bezdin cannot disagree with an earlier Bezdin only applies to enactments, rabbinic enactments, a din de Rabbanon, not Gzeira de Rabbanon, a Takana de Rabbanon. Then you need Gadol B'Chochma V'Minyan. On Gzeira de Rabbanon, it doesn't even help if you have Gadol B'Chochma V'Minyan. And regarding a din d'oraisa, you don't even need Gadol B'Chochma V'Minyan. Every Bezdin has the right to say whatever they want. This is what the Rambam writes. The idea of? Okay. We usually assume the Talmud points out that there is the miut in the generations. As the generations go on, as you go further away from Imon HaSinai, so there's less and less learning. The people who lived in earlier generations had a stronger tradition. But there are exceptions to the rule. We know that there are certain generations where they were much stronger than the generation that preceded them, than two or three generations that preceded them. We know there are some generations where they were weaker than in later generations. There are exceptions to the rule. This is very interesting, Stam, this whole idea of how much emphasis do we place on precedent. Some of you may remember the Eichmann trials, when the Israeli government had Adolf Eichmann on trial, and the lawyer who was the state attorney general, no, he was a lawyer for the Israeli government, what's his name, Gideon Hausner, was explaining why Eichmann should be punished. So he quoted, I remember in the middle of the proceedings, he quoted a judge in Idaho who gave a psak on something, and he never heard of the judge, and he didn't know what Idaho was, and he couldn't even pronounce Idaho. So he said, he was speaking in Hebrew, so he said, Eze shofet by Idaho. The three syllables, Idaho. So he placed the emphasis on Idaho, and he kept on saying, Idaho, Idaho. So the judge kept on telling him, Tagid Idaho, at least pronounce it right. He didn't even know how to pronounce the name. So to the learned listeners who were watching on the television, we thought that the whole thing was a joke, that in the secular system, they keep on quoting earlier poskim. They don't know how to pronounce the names. They have no sheikhs on the other side of the globe. The other side is totally not near territory, so it has nothing to do with Jewish law. And the quoting precedent, in halacha, how much emphasis is placed on precedent? To what extent do we follow precedent? So here the Rambam claims that when it comes to the dinim deraisa, the bezdin in every generation has the right and the obligation to paskin the way they understand the halacha, ignoring the precedent. It doesn't matter what the earlier generation said. Even if the earlier generation is greater b'chochma v'minyan, there are more rabbonim in the earlier generation, and there were greater Torah scholars. It doesn't matter. The bezdin in your generation has to paskin the way they understand the halacha. So let's elaborate on this. This is very crucial. The Rambam, again, in his Hakdamah to the Pirush HaMishnah, has divided all of the Torah Shebaal Peh into the five categories that we keep on referring to. So in the third section, where he talks about the development of the Torah Shebaal Peh through the Midrash HaTorah Nedreshes Behem, so he mentions a view which he considers meguna, which he considers despicable. He doesn't think that it's acceptable at all. He thinks it's an embarrassment that someone should have expressed such a view. There was such an opinion among the Rishonim who preceded the Rambam, and there was such an opinion in later generations as well. What is the nature of the Yud Gimel Midrash HaTorah Nedreshes Behem? When you look in the Siddur, we mentioned before Baruch Shomar, so there's a brisa that appears there, that's the opening brisa in the Torah's Kohanim. In the Sifro, the Rabbi Shmuel says, Be Yud Gimel Midas HaTorah Nedreshes Behem. There are basically 13, the Meda 13, the 113. But he mentions there are 13 Midas HaTorah Nedreshes Behem, 13 ways how to read in between the lines of the Chumash in order to come up with new halachas. So the Talmud tells us, among the 13 Midas HaTorah Nedreshes Behem, Talmud makes a comment about two of them. The Talmud tells us that a Kal Vachomer, if the Chumash has a din in such a case, if it's like that, so it certainly will be so in another case, which is more so in one direction or the other. That's a Kal Vachomer. So a Kal Vachomer, you have a right to darshan your own Kal Vachomer. The Rabbanim in every generation have a right to invent their own Kal Vachomer, even if they didn't have any tradition from their earlier generations that this is the case. Kal Vachomer, you just open your own eyes and you darshan on your own. That's common sense. Not exactly common sense, but maybe we'll discuss that later. It's not exactly common sense, but it's along the lines of common sense. A gzera shava, on the other hand, gzera shava means that you have a word in one pasuk in Chumash, then you have the same word or a very similar word in another pasuk in Chumash, and you assume that this is serving like an asterisk, that there must be a connection between these two words. It says over here, Bereshis Bar Elokim Es HaShamayim Es HaOretz, so the word HaOretz appears, and the word HaOretz appears somewhere else, just for argument's sake, so there must be a connection between the two. The word HaOretz appears a lot of times in Tanakh. The word HaOretz appears a lot of times in Chumash. Who tells you that there's a connection over here? Who tells you that this is an asterisk? The word is not extra. So the Talmud says, Ein Anam Dong Zera Shova, that's called Gzera Shova. When the same word appears, a similar word appears in two different places, we assume that there's a relationship, there's a connection, and the dina must be similar in some sense or another. So this, a person can only darshan Gzera Shova if Kibla Mei Rabba, if he has a tradition from his Rebbe all the way back, L'moshe Misinai, that these words were intended to lend themselves to a Gzera Shova. Can't invent your own Gzera Shova on your own. The question is, the Talmud only made a comment regarding two out of the 13 Midrash HaTorah Nedreshes Behem. Well, what about the other 11? What about the other 100? We said there aren't really 13 Midrash. There are 113 Midrash, more than 113 Midrash. You look in the Talmud has different forms of Midrash HaTorah Nedreshes Behem. The Tana listed off only, this Tana Rebbe Shmuel only listed off 13. Like the Tosefta quotes, makes a statement that Hillel only had 7 Midrash HaTorah Nedreshes Behem. So Gratz, the one who wrote the history book, has a whole discussion of this, that Hillel invented 7, and later generations they invented more, and they made it into 13. So all of the commentaries, all the historians point that Rabbi Hirsch has the fifth volume of the collected writings that was just translated into English now. It was all an attack against Gratz's comments on the development of the Torah Shebaal Peh, has a whole volume on this topic that we are discussing. So he points out, and others point out the same thing, that is totally incorrect. Hillel didn't invent the Midrash HaTorah and the Drashas Behem, and the seven are really the same thing as the 13, and the 13 are 113. There never was a dispute. There are many Midrash HaTorah and the Drashas Behem. The seven that Hillel spoke of were concise, they combined all the 13 into seven. That's the Pashtas like that. So the question is, what about the other Midrash HaTorah and Drashas Behem? Aside from those that the Talmud spoke of, the Gzeira Shova, you cannot be done on your own. You cannot invent your own Gzeira Shova. Kal v'chomer, you can be done on your own. What about all of the other Midrash HaTorah and Drashas Behem? Do you say that every Talmud Chacham and every generation has the right to darshan on his own how he understands the Torah Shebaal Peh? Or should we assume that everything has to be a masorah from the days of Moshe Rabbeinu? Everything has to have a tradition. If everything has to have a tradition, so what do you need the Midrash HaTorah and the Drashas Behem for? What do you need the Kalal Prat and Prat Kalal and Dov Shoei B'Kalal? What do you need everything? Just have you have a tradition on all the dinim and shayin. So some claim the tradition is just a remez. It's just a mnemonic device in order to remember what the din is. But it's not really that's the derivation of the din. The din they all had by tradition. They had Kabbalahs on all the dinim from the days of Moshe Rabbeinu. That's what the Torah Shebaal Peh is all about. And there never was any development of the halacha at all. The title of the course over here is the development of the Torah Shebaal Peh. So that those who claim there never was any development, the only development in the area of the Torah Shebaal Peh was the dinim derabbanan. Those were developed over the generation. In the dinim deraisa, there never was any development. And the Midrash HaTorah and the Drashas Behem don't mean that you have the right to come up with new dinim in every generation. No, it's not so. The Midrash HaTorah and the Drashas Behem are just a way, a remez, to remember what the dinim are, like an asmachta. Onto Chepin and the Din to a Pasuk to show that maybe there's a remez in this Pasuk for this Din, or perhaps to serve as a way to check on the Dinim. That we have all these traditions, but maybe over the generations, maybe someone will make a mistake in transmitting the tradition. They may say it over wrong. So any tradition that you have that doesn't have a method of finding it out from the Psukim must be a mistake. So there were those who felt like that. Some claim that Rashi holds like that. There's a famous Rashi in Sukkah Daf Lamed Aleph, Amud Aleph, where Rashi sounds like he says like that. Rashi sounds like he says, from all of the Midrash HaTorah and the Drashas Behem, the only thing you have a right to darshan on your own without a tradition is Kal V'chomer. So Taisus right away disagrees with the Rashi that it can't be. It's impossible. It's against all of the Talmud. Of course you can darshan on your own. The Prima Godim has an essay about this. Prima Godim was a scholar who lived in the Galatiana, who lived in Germany, in Frankfurt, the other Frankfurt, not in Frankfurt on the Main. And he wrote, we referred to it a few times, he wrote this introduction to the whole Torah Shebaal Peh, to his Psicha Kolelis, to Or HaChaim, his general introduction to all of Torah Shebaal Peh. So he wrote also several little svarim on Midrash HaTorah and Drashas Behem. One of them is called Ginas Verodim. One is called Shoshana Saramakim. So in the Ginas Verodim, he understands like this. This is a legitimate dispute between Rashi and Taisus. And he doesn't think that the Rashi is so difficult. The Pashto says, you look into it if you have time. Rashi probably never said it. But there was such an opinion. There was such an opinion. In fact, Rabbi Hirsch writes like that. Rabbi Hirsch, in this fifth volume of the collected writings, is attacking many things that Gratz wrote. He just says that it's not so. He claims historical facts. It just shows that there are no sources for this. And if anything, it's against the sources that it says in the Talmud. So Rabbi Hirsch was so infuriated against all the things that Gratz wrote, so in heaping all of his attack, all of his bizyanis against Gratz, so he threw out a lot of things that Gratz said that weren't so bad. Not everything that he said.
He had a personal animus.
Okay, but some of the things that Rabbi Hirsch writes are not necessary. He attacks Gratz for even things that he says that are not so wrong. Some of the things are not only not wrong, they're even right. So this is one of the things that Rabbi Hirsch writes. He thinks that the Midrash HaTorah and the Drashas Behem were not invented by the later generations. Of course not. The Midrash HaTorah and the Drashas Behem were L'moshe Mi-Sinai. But he thinks that the pshat is that they had a tradition on all the dinim. And the purpose, so what's the purpose of the Midrash HaTorah and the Drashas Behem? If you have a tradition, so you have, you know what the dinim are. What do you need the Midrash HaTorah and Drashas Behem? That's just in order to serve as a check to make sure that in case there's an error in a tradition, so try to figure out based on the psukim, can you darshan this din from the Midrash HaTorah? If you can't darshan it out, then it's a simon that your tradition is wrong. So this is what the Rambam writes is maguna. The Rambam says that those who say like that, this is, some say that Rashi said like that, Rabbi Hirsch says it. And there were others in between, Rashi and Rabbi Hirsch, who did say like that, so the Rambam thinks that that's terrible. The Rambam writes in the Hakdama, in his introduction to the Pirush HaMishnah, you're going to tell me that every dispute in the Talmud, every machlokes Satanaim and Amaroim, is simply because of the fact that there was a breakdown in the transmission of the Torah Shebaal Peh? They simply forgot. They had a tradition on everything, from A to Z. Every single din had a tradition on. And every time there's a machlokes, every time there's a dispute in the Talmud, it's because there was a breakdown in tradition. He said the tradition is like this, and the other one said the tradition is like that. So the Rambam says, that's terrible. You mean they forgot the bulk of the Torah Shebaal Peh? They forgot about everything. So the Rambam says he doesn't believe that that's correct. He says that that's an improper way of viewing things. The pshat simply is that whenever they had a tradition as to what the din is, that's called halacha l'moshe misinai. If you have a tradition, it's a tradition. There's not going to be a dispute on that. They're not going to forget that. That's why the Rambam writes, and you never find the machlokes on a halacha l'moshe misinai. Whenever the Talmud has something that's halacha l'moshe misinai, they're never going to dispute that. Whatever the halacha l'moshe misinai was, that's the halacha. It's not shaykh to have an argument about that. When a new shayla came up where they had no tradition, so then the rabbis in every generation were given the authority to darshan in using the midrash atarna drashas mem the way they understood, the way they saw fit. And every generation said they were instituting new dinim. There was much rabbinic input. It's not that all the dinim were there and they're just transmitting it. There was tremendous amount of rabbinic input, not only regarding instituting takanas derabbanan, akzeiros derabbanan, but in developing the dinim deraisa as well. See, that's the question. Was there really a development of the Torah Shebaal Peh? There's a famous figure in Eretz Yisrael, Steinsaltz, Professor Steinsaltz. So he wrote different books, but he has different things to say. So one of the books he writes, he wrote a lot of books. So one of the books he writes about the development of the Torah Shebaal Peh in every generation, there were darshanim, so he was so just like he was attacked on, like rats, he was attacked on the things that he deserved to be attacked on, so they attacked him on everything that he said. So they attacked Steinsaltz even on this. What do you mean the development of the Torah Shebaal Peh? Everything was there all along. So he was just quoting the Rambam. He didn't, this part of which maybe other things before and after are not acceptable, but this thing that he wrote, he was just quoting what the Rambam says. That's famous. The Rambam makes a point of this, and he says, whoever says otherwise is a maguna. It's an improper way of understanding the Torah Shebaal Peh. I don't even know if he's a rabbi. Is he a rabbi?
No, he's called Rabbi Steinsaltz.
Uh-huh. Okay, Rabbi Steinsaltz. Okay. Pardon me, did what?
Did the dovetail what was going on also among the Greeks at that time?
I'm not familiar with the Greeks. Don't know. Could be that it has some relationship. I'm not familiar. So I remember about several years ago when they had this big attack against Rabbi Steinsaltz. So there was a conference of Rabbonim. So one of the Rabbonim who spoke was from the Aguda, from Flatbush, one of the prominent rabbis. So he said, he got up and he said, all of my children are married already, so now I can say whatever I want. And he says, that's how he started off, because he lives in the middle of Flatbush, a famous rabbi. And he says, what they're attacking Steinsaltz is ridiculous, they're crazy. Steinsaltz is 100% right. He says, that's what it says in the Rambam. And anybody says otherwise, the Rambam says it's Maguna. Not only is this what the Rambam says, you find in the Gemara like that. The Gemara says, beferish the following. If you look, there's a startling passage in the Gemara. In Zvochim, on Daf Samach Aleph on the base, the Gemara says the Bais Rishon lasted for 410 years. And then it was in a state of destruction. The temple was destroyed in a state of destruction for 7 years. And then Ezra and Nehemiah came back. They built the second temple, and that lasted longer than the Bais Rishon. So the Gemara says during the period of the Bais Rishon, they fulfilled the mitzvah of Nisach HaYayin. There's a mitzvah in the Torah that in conjunction with offering of the sacrifices, animal sacrifices on the Mizbeach, you have to also pour wine on the Mizbeach. So the way they poured the wine, the 410 years of the Bais Rishon was one way, because they understood the Psukim Chumash one way. When they built the second temple, it was under new management, there were different rabbis, and they understood the Psukim differently, so they offered the Yayin, the Nisach HaYayin, differently. They did the Korban Nisach HaYayin differently. So the Chassidish Rebbe, the Sfasemis, the Ge'er Rebbe has a Sefer on Gemara that everybody uses, the Sfasemis on Gemara. So he write. It wasn't really written as a book for publication. These are really his own private notes. He wrote his own private notes, and after he passed away, his son-in-law published it, and they were afraid to change anything. So every so often, he has things that are against Gemaras, but they're afraid to change it. So they printed embarrassing things, and they put in brackets, look in this Mishnah, look in this Gemara. The Rebbe forgot this. The Rebbe forgot this. So here also, the Rebbe asked Akasha, I don't understand. You mean for 410 years they weren't yotze the mitzvah of Nisach HaYayin? That the whole period of the Bais Rishon, they were never yotze the mitzvah properly, because the correct way to do it was the way it was done during the Bais Sheni. So he gives a whole suggestion of an answer, which he himself admits is very weak. And the Svasemis, on Zvochem, Adav Samach Alef Mebeis. The generally accepted understanding is simple. The Talmud has a statement, a famous statement in Erevin, on Daf Yud Gimel Mebeis, that Eilu V'Eilu Divrei L'Kim Chai. Whenever you have a dispute among the Chachamim, and we paskin one way, it doesn't necessarily mean that the other way is incorrect. It means halacha l'maisa, we follow the majority rule of the Chachamim in your generation. But it doesn't mean that the minority view is incorrect. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the Torah to Moshe Rabbeinu, and he gave it up, and he said, lo b'shamayim hi. The Gemara says he told us, lo b'shamayim hi. Then when we'll have a shayla, had a paskin, we shouldn't ask a novi. We should try to figure it out to the best of our ability. And the psak should be according to the understanding of the Talmid HaChachamim who live in one's generation. He gave the hachras, psak halacha, up. He left the hachras, psak halacha, up to the Chachamim in every generation. You have what the Talmud refers to as Mishnah Rishayna and Mishnah Achrayna. Mishnah Rishayna and Mishnah Achrayna means like this. It was very common that the Tanoim in one generation would paskin one way, the majority opinion would be one way, and in a later generation, or generations later, they would reverse the psak. This is very often in the Gemara. The Mishnah will use the expression Bezn Shalachrehem Amru. The later rabbis reversed the psak and they said otherwise. And the Talmud will refer to such an instance when the early psak was one way, and you have Bezn Shalachrehem Amru. The later rabbis said otherwise. The Talmud will refer to this as a case of Mishnah Rishayna and Mishnah Achrayna. Mishnah Rishayna doesn't mean we call Mishnayis the printed text of the Mishnayis that we have. Mishnah Rishayna just means the original earlier psak, and Mishnah Achrayna means the later psak. This is very common. And the Rambam writes that this is the principle of Ein Lo Chalo Shofet Shebiyamecha, what it says in the Pasuk, Vasala Shofet Hashiyah B'yamim Ha'im. You have to come and ask the Talmid HaChachamim who live in your generation, and whatever they paskin is what's binding. In fact, there is a Pasuk in Koheles, one of the opening Pasuk in Koheles, where it says, Ein Kol Chodesh Tachas HaShemesh. What does that mean? Ein Kol Chodesh Tachas HaShemesh. So we usually translate Tachas HaShemesh under the sun. Under the sun. It means the whole wide world. So Rashi quotes from the Medrash a different interpretation. Tachas means instead of. Like you have in the Chumash Shmos and Parshas Mishpatim, Shor Tachas HaShor. Chamisha Baki Shalom Tachas HaShor, Ba'arbatzon Tachas HaTzeh. So Tachas means instead of. So Ein Kol Chodesh Tachas HaShemesh. Shemesh means the Torah. Rashi quotes from the Medrash. Shemesh refers to the Torah. There's nothing Chodesh outside of the Torah. In Torah there are Chidushim. Every day people learn there are Chidushim. And outside of the area of Torah there are no Chidushim. Everything in the world is the same, boring world we live in, nothing new. So they once asked the Chazon Ish, isn't it just the reverse? In the Torah there's nothing new. The Torah was already given at Har Sinai, and everything that we pilpul throughout all the generations is just an elaboration of what it says in the Torah. Whereas in the secular world, they have airplanes, they have telephones, they have all kinds of new inventions, new things that they clearly didn't exist in, fax machines, things that didn't exist in earlier generations. How can you say that Chiddush is only in Torah, and outside of the area of Torah, there's no Chiddush? So the Chazon Ish explained, no, what Rashi quoted the Medrash, Ein Kol Chodesh Tachas Hashem, there's no Chiddushim outside of the area of Torah. There's only Chiddushim in the area of Torah. So the Chazon Ish explained what it meant. He said, when it comes to the fax machines, and the airplanes, and the telephones, and all the new inventions, everything is based on the old principles of physics, and chemistry, and mathematics, and astronomy. Everything is there from Sheshes Mei Breishes. Nothing new happening, just a new application. There are discoveries. They're discovering more and more of what was there in the Bria from Sheshes Mei Breishes, and they're making new applications of the old principles. He says, in Halacha, though, you have Mamash Chidushim. The Bezin can come up with a new din today, which will only be Noig Mikan al Haba, a new din deraisa, not just the din derabbanan. If the Bezin introduces a new din derabbanan, let's say the rabbis introduced the prohibition of the rabbanan that you're not allowed to eat Gvina Sakum. At one point in the history of the Tanoi made Gzeira, you're not permitted to eat cheese that was manufactured by Goyim. And the Gemara has a whole discussion, what's wrong with it? What prompted them to make this Gzeira? Kraft cheese. The Gemara says you're not allowed to eat Kraft cheese. So the Rishonim explain, the Gzeira, the Rabbanon, only begins, Mikan al Haba. You can't say that all the way back, ex post facto, also was awesome. From the day that they made the Gzeira on, the cheese is awesome. And there's even a question in the Gemara, when they made the Gzeira de Rabbanon, and people had some cheese at that time that was made by Goyim, and up until the time the Chachamim made the Gzeira, that cheese was kosher. So when you say you don't have a Gzeira that's chalek ex post facto, does that mean the cheeses that will be manufactured by non-Jews from now on are rosa? Or means whatever cheeses are in existence now, even though they already were manufactured, and yesterday they were kosher, the cheeses were kosher yesterday, but you didn't eat it yesterday. You want to eat it today. So what was kosher yesterday just became treif today, even though you could have eaten it yesterday. So that's a question, and Rishonim explained that's a question in the Gemara and Chulin. When they make exer the rabbanon, it only applies mikan al haba. What does that mean, mikan al haba? That it doesn't go ex post facto. But what if you have a din deraisa? If you have a din deraisa, we always assume all the whenever the chachamim are discovering a din deraisa, the din deraisa goes all the way back from Sheshes Mei Breshes. So the Chazanish says, not necessarily so. Sometimes you have a din deraisa that the chachamim developed now that never was so. It's mamish achadosh achidush that it didn't exist before. The chachamim invented a new din with the power vested in them, with the midrash alternate reshes bam, to have a right to darshan the Torah and to come up with new dinim. And they only apply mikara labo. Let's say a child was born last year, and the chachamim last year thought that that child is not a mamzer. And the chachamim this year decided, based on a new drasha, based on the midrash alternate reshes bam, that that child, such a circumstance, should be a mamzer. So that child who was born last year will not be a mamzer from now on. And such a child will come up, the new children will be mamzer. But that child was born before, it's like a gzeira derabbanan. A gzeira derabbanan only applies mikana labo. So the same is true, the Chazanish writes, with respect to dinim deraisa, that the chachamim developed in each generation that these dinim deraisa only apply mikan al haba. He understood that that was the pashup shot in the medrash that Rashi quoted in the beginning of Sefer Koheles. This topic that the Chazanish touched on is really a discussion in earlier achronim. There was a great scholar who lived in the 1700s, a Sfardish gadol, who was known as the Chido by the Rashi Tevis of his name, Chaim Yosef David. He had three first names, Chaim Yosef David, and the family name was Azuloi. Some say that the name Azuloi is Isha Zayin of Achalol Lo Yikachu, that they were Kohanim. And this is Rashi Tevis. So the Chidor writes in the Sefer that that's not true, that the Azuloi family are not Kohanim, and it's a Sephardish name, and it has nothing to do with Isha Zayin of Achalol Lo Yikachu. Okay. Anyway, he was a famous person. He was a mishulach. What did he do for a living? He was a mishulach for a yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. So in order to raise money, he traveled all over Europe, and he visited Vilna, and in the days of the Vilna Goyen, he lived, and he met the Chagas Aryeh, and he visited Amsterdam, and he visited France, and he traveled all over the world to raise money. So he writes all about his travels and everything. So the late 1700s. He wrote many, many svarim. We use all of his form. He wrote history books. He wrote a very fascinating writer. So in one of the svarim that he wrote is called Simchas HaRegel. It's a commentary on Megillas Rus. He wrote many svarim. On Tanakh and on Gemara and on Shulchan Aruch, he wrote everything. So in the Sefer Simchas HaRegel, he discusses this shaila, and he quotes that this was a dispute among earlier Mefarshim. He lived in the 1700s, late 1700s. He quotes people from the 1500s and from the 1600s who argued about this din. If the Chachamim of one generation develop a new din, the Oraisa, based on the drasha of the Psukim, they didn't have a tradition of this din from earlier generations. They didn't have any tradition at all. They decided Yesh Me'ayin to darshan the Psukim the way they see fit, like in the beginning of the period of the Bais Sheni, to darshan the Psukim differently from the Chachamim who lived in the Bais Rishon. They weren't saying that they were more intelligent. They weren't saying that they were greater B'chachma V'minyan than the Rabbanim in the first Bais HaMikdash. They said, with all due respect, we understand the Psukim differently. We want to Paskin differently. So they're permitted to and they're obligated to darshan the Psukim the way they understand it. Not permitted just to give in because the others lived in an earlier generation and they were greater scholars and they were greater tzaddikim. You're not allowed to do that. You have to express your honest to goodness opinion. So the Chido quotes this dispute among Achronim, quotes the Shach HaLator and other commentaries who discuss this, exactly this point that the Chazanish said. When the Chachamim come up with such a new din, does this din only apply Mikan al Habo? Or do you say, no, that doesn't make any sense. We're not dealing with a din derabbanan, we're talking about a real din deraisa. Din deraisa means that this was always so from the days of Maimon HaSin Ayan. How can you have a din deraisa that's only Noig Mikan al Habo? So this is a dispute among Achronim. So the Chazanish seems to be saying, pshat in this medrash, in the beginning of Koheles, like those who hold, no, the din d'araisa is only effective, mikan al haba. It only takes effect from this point on, from that generation that it was developed on. This is the more popular understanding of the phrase that the Talmud has, elu v'elu divri l'kim chayim. The context of the statement in Erev and Daf Yud Gimel is the Talmud is speaking about the many disputes between the Beis Shammai and the Beis Hillel, and we follow the majority opinion, namely that of the Beis Hillel. They were usually in the majority. There were some issues there were 24 instances where the Bishamay were in the majority, so then we passed like the Bishamay. But in all the other cases, we passed like the Basila, they were in the majority. And then the Gemara says, and don't think that the opinion that's rejected is wrong. No, we say, Elohi Ela Divrei Elokim Chayim. So the Ran, the same author that we mentioned before, the Drasha Saran, has another Drasha in the Drusha Shlishi, where he discusses this comment of Elohi Ela Divrei Elokim Chayim. And this paragraph, here's just one paragraph in the middle. This paragraph happens to be on page 20 in the standard editions. So this paragraph became famous. It was quoted in the introduction to the Ktzos HaChoshen. There are four sections to the Shulchan Aruch. There's Arachayim, Yeredeya, Ebenezer, and Choshen Mishpat. So Choshen Mishpat is all about Nezikin, all about monetary matters, Dini Mominus, Dini Torah, and the like. So there's a famous commentary on Choshen Mishpat that's called the Ktzos HaChoshen, that they study in yeshivas. They study in yeshivas without studying the Choshen Mishpat. It's a book that can be read independently of the Shulchan Aruch. It's so well written, they're long essays, and you can read them without studying the Shulchan Aruch itself. So in the yeshivas, that you read the Sefer, Ktzos HaChoshen. They don't read the introduction. But the introduction is also of value. He discusses who gives him the right to write a commentary on Shulchan Aruch. Who gives him the right to come up with original ideas? Maybe he doesn't know what he's talking about. Maybe he's making a mistake. So he quotes this Drasha Saran in his Hakdama to the Ktzos HaChoshen, where the Ran comments on the Gemara, that the Gemara says there were many disputes between Reb Lezer. In the period of the Tanaim, there was a Tana Reb Lezer ben Hurkanus, otherwise known as Reb Lezer HaGadol. So Reb Lezer HaGadol was in disagreement with the majority of the Rabbanim in his generation. The Gemara points out Reb Lezer ben Hurkanus was a student from the Beis Shammai, Reb Lezer Shamutihu. He usually followed the views of Beis Shammai. So just like in the earlier generations, Beis Shammai's opinions were outvoted, they were in the minority. So to Reb Lezer in his generation, he was a super genius. Everybody knew that he was bigger than them, but still he was outvoted. They didn't agree with him. So the Gemara in Bava Metzia, in the end of Perek HaZov, tells the whole story that one day he had a whole debate with Rabbi Yeshua, all the other Tanoim. And he said, what do you mean? Everybody knows that I'm right. How do you have the right to disagree with me? So he said, the buxa trees should show that I'm right. So the trees fell down. The trees should show that I'm right. So the trees fell down on the ground. So Rabbi Yeshua said, the trees, we don't accept the opinion of the trees. They're not rabbis. Then he said, the river will show that I'm right. So the river started to flow backwards. So he says, the river is not a rabbi, does not smicha, we're not going to accept the opinion of the river. Then he says, the walls of the Beis Medrash will show that I'm right. So the walls started to cave in. So Rabbi Yeshua said, keep your mouth shut. So the walls stopped. So the walls started to go like this, and they stopped in the middle. Rabbi Yeshua said, don't mix in, it's none of your business. So the walls stopped, and the Beis Medrash was leaning walls of the Beis Medrash. And then he said, all right, Rabbi Lezer said, all right, from heaven they're going to say that I'm right. So a voice came out from heaven and said, what do you disagree with Rabbi Lezer? Everything he says is 100% correct. So Rabbi Yeshua said, lo b'shamayim hi. That's not the way we pass on Shabbos. That's one Gemara. Then there's another Gemara in the end of Bava Metzia, where the Gemara says that there was a certain issue regarding Tumas Tzaras, but there was a dispute between Rabbi Bar Bachana. He was an Amora who was an expert in the area of Negoim. It's a special expertise, a separate Mishnayos. Really separate from the rest of the Torah Shabbal Peh, the rest of the halachas. So he had a dispute with the other Chachamim, and then somehow they have a record that there was a dispute in heaven between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the angels. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said one way. And the Rambam doesn't paskin like HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Rambam paskins like Rabbi Baba Chana, because he was the expert in the area. So all the commentaries say, what's going on? The Rambam paskins against the Rabbanu Shalom. The Gemara says the Rabbanu Shalom said Tohar. How did the Rambam paskin Tomei? Like Rabbi Baba Chana. So that's what all the Mefarshim say. That's what the Hakdama to the Ktzos HaChoshen is talking about. So he quotes from the Drasha Saran that when the Rabbanu Shalom gave the Torah to Moshe Rabbeinu Har Sinai, he gave him the Torah Shebichsa, he gave him the Halachas L'Moshe Misinai, the oral traditions, and then he gave him the Midah Shatar Nedreshes Mem, and he said he leaves it up to the Chachamim, up to the understanding of the Rabbanim and every generation to paskin according to the way they read in between the lines, according to the way they understand the Torah Shebaal Peh. So you can have different perspectives. You can have different perspectives on halacha. That's Rabbi Lezer had one perspective, and Rabbi Yeshua and the others had a different perspective. Bishama had one perspective. Basil had a different perspective. What the Rabbanu Shalom says, that he thinks that it would be more correct to do like this, but he told us himself that we should ignore that perspective. We have to paskin according to what we consider is the correct perspective in that generation. So you can have in one generation they'll paskin one way, and another generation they'll paskin another way. That's called Eilu V'Eilu, Divrei Elokim Chayim. The Rabbanu Shalom left the Hachras, Psaka Halacha, up to the Talmidei Chachamim in every generation.
Why does it show that God is actually happy that the people are making their own decisions regardless of what the truth is?
Right. Not regardless of what the truth is. No, the Baruch Shalom said, Nitzchuni Bonai, my children outsmarted me. Means that they understand well what the Torah is all about.
No.
They Nitzchuni Bonai, not that they understand better than I. They understand how to paskin shilas and to ignore the baskol. They understand correctly to ignore the baskol, that they're supposed to paskin according to human understanding. I don't think that much. There were a lot of differences between the Chachmei Ashkenaz and the Chachmei Svar, but maybe we'll get to that. If we'll have enough time, we'll get to that in a later talk. But the Pashtus, this is the generally accepted pshat in the Gemara when it says Eilavi Eilavi Velikim Chaim. Now you have to know that Sefer HaChinuch has a different understanding of this. Sefer HaChinuch in Chumash Dvarim on the Parsha of Zalka Mamre, when it says when you have a Shaila in Parsha Shoftim, when it says when you have a Shaila, you go and you ask the Bez Nagodol, you have to follow the psak of the Bez Nagodol. So he discusses, what does that mean, Eilavi Eilavi Velikim Chaim? So he claims that it only applies in a limited instance. The Sefer HaChinuch claims it only applies in the following circumstance, when the majority is really right, when the minority opinion is really more correct, but they're being outvoted by the majority of the Chachamim who are wrong. So what are you supposed to do? He claims that that's what it says, he understood the Gemara like that. The Gemara says that the Beis Shammai were more brilliant, the members of the Beis Shammai, of Shammai's yeshiva were more brilliant than the Beis Hillel. That's what the Gemara says. The Beis Shammai were mechadadi tvei. They were more brilliant than the students of the Beis Hillel. So the Sefer HaChinuch understands the Gemara to mean like this. The Beis Shammai were really right, but because they were more brilliant, so they probably figured it out correctly. The Beis Hillel were really wrong, but under the circumstances, what are you going to do? You're going to have, and every Shaila, half of the Jews are going to do one way, half of the Jews are going to do the other way, like we do in our generation. Everybody macht Shabbos Fazich, so the Baruch Shalom doesn't want that. So he says you have to listen to the psak of the Bezna HaGodol, whatever the majority opinion paskins, even if they're in error. That's what he claims. Even if they happen to be in error, if you don't know whether they're right or wrong, so follow the psak of the Bez Nagodol. So he says, in such a case, we say, only in such a case, they say, Eilu v'Eilu divi l'kim chaim. Why? The minority opinion is really right, Aliba Demis. That's the real correct opinion. But the Rabbanu Shalom wants you to follow the majority under the circumstances, Shaloti Asa HaTorah, Kishtei Torahs. This is what the Sefer HaChinuch writes. But again, that's not the generally accepted opinion. That's not the way the Ritva, and that Gemara in his commentary on Erev and Daf Yigimel, that's not the way he understands. He describes the following, he visualizes that Moshe Rabbeinu is on Har Sinai, and the Rabbanu Shalom is teaching the Torah 40 days and 40 nights, and he teaches him this is awesome and this is mut, and then Moshe Rabbeinu says, well, what about this case? It's not exactly like this, not exactly like that. It's not black and it's not white. What do you do in the gray area of halacha? So the Rabbanu Shalom says that's correct, that has elements of Isser, elements of Heter, and it's a gray area of halacha, and I leave it up to the Chachmei HaTorah Shebechol Davador to paskin according to their general perspective, according to their understanding of Kol HaTorah Kula. And you can have different perspectives. I'm looking at all the people in this room from one perspective. There are people sitting in the back, they see everything that I see with a different, they see exactly everything. Sometimes you have a person who's blind in one eye, so he doesn't have the same perspective. Sometimes you have a person who's only looking at one person. I'm looking at one person, I don't see all the other people. So you're not looking at the whole picture. But if you have many Talmid Chachamim, all looking at the whole body of Torah, they're looking at Kol HaTorah Kula, and each one has a different perspective, so that's legitimate. You can have many people looking at the exact same thing from different perspectives. And that's what the Rabbanu Shalom said. Eilavi Eilavi Divi L'Kim Chaim. He leaves the final Hachras, Psak HaLacha, in the gray areas, where there are elements of Heter, elements of Issa. He leaves the final Hachra up to the Chachmei HaTorah Shebechol Davador. This is how the Ritva visualizes it. This is how the Maharsha in the Chidushi Agoda understands that passage in the Gemara. This is a famous comment. The Maharal Miprag writes like that. That's the way it's usually assumed. That's the way that Gemara is usually understood. That Eilu Eilu Divi L'Kim Chaim is not only applicable in that one rare case where the minority were really more correct, but under the circumstances, the Rabbanu Shalom wants us to follow the majority opinion, because otherwise it'll be hefker. The whole Jewish people will be split. It'll look like a different religion, like it looks now. The Hasidim follow the religion one way. The Misnagna follow different Hasidim follow the religion differently. Looks like each one is a different religion. Looks like totally different religion. So that's what the Rabbanu Shalom didn't want. So this principle, this assumption that we're making, that there was a development of the Torah Shebaal Peh over the generations, then in every generation the Chachmei HaTorah had input. And according to the way they understood, that's the way they paskin. And they're obligated, they're permitted to voice their opinion, even in disagreement with greater scholars who were greater b'chochma minyan in earlier generations, permitted to, and they're obligated to give their honest opinion. In fact, there's a collection of tshuvas that's called the tshuvas Chut HaMeshulosh. The collection of tshuvas of three, there were several Rashi Yeshiva in Volozhin. We spoke about Volozhin Yeshiva only lasted for 90 years, 91 years. So with the tshuvas of the three famous Rashi Yeshiva are included there. The first third of the Sefer is the tshuvas of Rab Chaim Volozhin. And then the other two sections are by then his son was Rabbi Yitzchak of Volozhin, and we have very little from him. It's not included in the Sefer. And then he had two sons-in-law whose tshuvas are included there, Rabbi Lezer Ritshe and Rabbi Hillel. And then he had his other son-in-law was a Nitziv, has his own volume of tshuvas, the Meshiv Dover. So the Chut HaMeshulosh is a collection of the tshuvas of these three Rashi Yeshiva Volozhin. It's not used so much with respect to the tshuvas of Rabbi Lezer Ritshe or Rabbi Hillel. They were great Talmid HaChachamim, the two sons-in-law of Rabbi Yitzchak Volozhin, who is the son of Rabbi Chaim Volozhin. It's usually used because of the first third, because of the tshuvas of Rabbi Chaim Volozhin. Everyone wants to know what Rabbi Chaim Volozhin had to say. So in the history books, they quote every so often he has some important lines that are non-halachic or not really part of the tshuva. He has interesting comments. So he has one famous comment that became famous because the history books quoted, and one of the tshuvas that appears in the Chut HaMeshulosh, but he writes, he has a tradition, he quotes traditions that he got from the Vilna Gaon. Rabbi Chaim Volozhin was a student of the Vilna Gaon. So he quotes one of the important traditions is, if the Vilna Gaon is speaking, keep in mind, the Vilna Gaon says, to Rabbi Chaim Volozhin, and when you work out a psak, what the din is, and you're convinced that that's the din, and then you look in the Shulchan Aruch, and surprise of surprises, it says fakert, so he says, you're not allowed to follow the Shulchan Aruch. And he says, if you follow the Shulchan Aruch, you're in violation of Lois Sisofonim. What's a din? You have a din Torah, and you know that the poor man is right, but you don't want to embarrass the rich man. You know that the Am Haaretz is right, but you don't want to embarrass the rabbi. A din Torah between a rabbi and a balabos. How can you embarrass the rabbi? So the Parsek says in the Chumash, Lois Sisofonim Badin. You're not allowed to be nice to Fonim. If you know what the din is, you have to pask in the din and ignore whom you're going to hurt. You're going to hurt someone's feelings. Or this Nebuchadnezzar, poor man, the holding Torah is about $10. So give him the lousy $10 already. So you're passing in favor of the poor man, let the rich man give him. So the Chumash says, you're not allowed to see Safanei Dol. You're not allowed to pass in favor of the poor man because he's poor, because the rich man should give him charity anyway. They didn't ask whether he should give charity. They have a din Torah whether you owe him the $10 or not. So you have to pass in what the din is and ignore the fact that he's rich and he's poor and he's a Bekovadik at Balabas and he's a rabbi and he's a this and he's a that. So the Rabbi Chaim Volozhin has this famous line where he writes that if you work out what the din is and you're convinced that it's correct, and then you see the Shulchan Aruch says not so, it's a violation of Lasis Afonim Badin if you pass in favor of the Shulchan Aruch. Yeah, Mistam, it depends who worked out the din. If some rabbis worked out the din, they look in Shulchan Aruch, you see that it says Fakir, means that they made a mistake. You better go back to the Gemara and read it over again. The Vilna Gaon worked out the din, so he thinks that the Shulchan Aruch is wrong. Okay, so that's a famous comment. So the question is, and that's what it says in Shulchan Aruch also in effect. That's what it says in the Shulchan Aruch, Nachar Shemishpat Simen Chaf Hei. There's a whole simen that's dedicated to the topic of Torah B'Shikol Hadas. What's the din? People went for a din Torah. We had a dispute about $500,000, let's say, and we came to a din Torah, and the Dayanim passed in favor of one. And then a week later, they realized on their own, they made a mistake, they passed in wrong. So what's the din? Can they reverse the psak? Do they have a right to reverse the psak? So the Gemara says that there are rules and regulations. Sometimes they have a right to reverse the psak and say, we made a mistake, you got to give back the money. And sometimes they cannot reverse the psak. And then when they cannot reverse the psak, they have to pay from their own pocket because they were mafsed the other person the $500,000 if they're unable to reverse the psak. So there in the Shulchan Aruch, they have a discussion of how do you decide whether you made a mistake? How do you decide you made a mistake? So the Ramah has the following statement, among other things. He says that if a person lives in this generation, the Ramah lived in the 1500s in Krakow, in Poland. So he said, contemporary of the Beis Yosef, Rabbi Yosef Karo lived in Eretz Yisrael and Tzfas, and he wrote the Shulchan Aruch, and the Ramah wrote in Poland about the same time. The comments on the Shulchan Aruch. So the Ramah writes that if someone lives in our generation, and he works out the psak on a certain issue, and he looks in the literature of the Gaonim lived before the days of Rashi and Tosis, before the days of the Rishonim, those right after the period of the Amoraim, and he sees that the Gaonim say fakir, they say just the reverse. So is he bound to follow the psak of the Gaonim? So the Ramah says, The Rama says, well, he would recommend that you discuss it with other Rabbanim of the generation. You may have missed something. But then he says, yeah, I discussed it with all the Rabbanim. Look, I don't have a telephone. I don't have a fax machine. I can't discuss it with all the rabbis in the world. I discussed it with all the local Rabbanim in the neighborhood, and I presented my argument to explain why I think the Gaonim are wrong. So he says, so you have to follow your own shita. So you're not allowed to follow the Gaonim. If you're convinced that this is the din, you have to follow your opinion. Rav Moshe Feinstein did that all the time. Rav Moshe Feinstein was attacked many years ago, about 25 years ago. He was attacked by a certain famous Talmid Chacham in the New York area who published a book disagreeing with a lot of things that Rav Moshe said. And he said, and it's the book has a lot of merit, but it was written in a nasty tone. So he writes, Rav Moshe has a chutzpah that he thinks that he can disagree with the Chassam Sofer and the Nadi Yehuda and the Vilna Goyen, and who does he think he is? Does he think that he's bigger than them? So Rav Moshe said he didn't think that he was bigger than them. He just thought that he's entitled to an opinion. And the Halacha says if you're entitled, he says, maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm not entitled to an opinion. But if one should assume that I am entitled to an opinion, then the Halacha says I'm permitted and obligated to express my opinion, even a disagreement with people who came in earlier generations who seem to have been greater b'chochma v'minyan. Even if they held otherwise. That's the halacha. You have to express your honest opinion. If you're entitled to an opinion, one is obligated to express his honest opinion. So the question is, and that's exactly what it says in the Rambam. That's what we started with this morning. The Rambam wrote that with respect to dinim deraisa, there is no klal of ein bezn yochel batel debei bezn chaver lam kein gadol menem b'chochma v'minyan. That only applies to takonas derabbanan. If a later bezn wants to cancel a rabbinic enactment that was instituted by an earlier bezin. But if you're not dealing with a rabbinic enactment, you're dealing with the understanding of a pasuk in Chumash, then the Rambam quotes from the Gemara that it says, "Avosal ha-shefet ha-sheya b'yamim ha-heim, ein luchal ha-shefet she-b'yamecho, yiftach b'doro kishmul b'doro." The Chachamim in every generation, whatever they say, is binding. It's not only the Rambam is not the one who originated this. All the things in the Rambam are quoted from passages in the Talmud. This is a passage in the Talmud Yerushalmi, and the opening Mishnah Masechah Shviyas. So the Mishnah, beginning of Shviyas, is all about the laws of Shemitah. So there used to be an institution, Bizman Sheh Beis Hamikdash HaYikayim, during the period of the Second Temple, that Beis Shammai and Hill lived 100 years before the destruction of the Second Temple. And then after they passed away, they had these two yeshivas, the Beis Shammai and the Beis Hill. So they lived during the Zman Abayis, Bizman Bayis Sheni, and after the Churban Abayis as well. They continued on. So they had discussions, the Beis Shammai and the Beis Hillel had discussions during the period of the Bayis Sheni about the laws of Tosefes Shviyas. How much before Rosh Hashanah of Shnas HaShemitah do you have to begin to observe the prohibitions of Avodas HaKarka in Eretz Yisrael, that you're not allowed to work the ground in Eretz Yisrael during Shnas HaShemitah? So they discussed a month before, from Shavuos on, before Rosh Hashanah. How much before Rosh Hashanah do you have to start to observing the laws of Tosefes Shviyas? In a later generation, Rabbi Gamliel came and he abolished everything. No more din of Tosefes Shviyas. So Yishalmi says, what's going on? How can he abolish Tosefes Shviyas? Did he think that he was greater b'chochma v'minyan than the Beis Shammai and the Beis Hillel? Did he really think that he was greater? So Yishalmi says, no, he didn't have to think that he's greater. We're dealing with an issue deraisa. V'shosha asru la'mikra samchu. At the time that the Beis Hillel and the Beis Shammai prohibited Tosefes Shviyas, when they said you're not allowed to do Avodas HaKarka during the period of Tosefes Shviyas, they based it on the way they understand the Psukim. When the later generations, Rabbi Gamliel, disagreed and he felt that there's no din of Tosefes Shviyas, he also based on his understanding of the Psukim, similar to what we said, that during the whole period of the Bayis Rishon they did the whole Nisach HaYayin in one fashion. The whole period of Bayis Sheni, they did it in a totally different fashion. No kasha. That was the Mishnah Rishayna, and that was the Mishnah Acharayna. So here also, and there is no rule of Gadol B'chachma V'minyan. You don't have to be greater in scholarship or in number of Rabbanim and who gathered together to disagree with the opinions of the earlier Talmid Chacham. That's what it says in the Talmud Yerushalmi. It's quoted by all the commentaries on the first Mishnah in Shviyas. And the Taisvus and Rosh Hashanah also quotes this on Daf Tes Amud Aleph, and the Gemara talks about Tosefes Shabbos and Tosefes Yontif and Tosefes Shviyas, adding on to any Zman that has a Kedusha Zman. So the Taisvus on that Daf, on Tes Amud Aleph, Maseches Rosh Hashanah, quotes this comment from the Talmud Yerushalmi, that whenever you're dealing with a Din Deraisa, how to understand the Psukim, you don't require Gadol B'chochma V'minyan. So this leads Rabbi Yosef Karo. Rabbi Yosef Karo wrote the Shulchan Aruch. He's the author of the Shulchan Aruch. He's also the author of a commentary on the side of the Rambam that's printed in all the standard editions. It's called the Kesef Mishnah. because the name was Yosef, and with the story with when the brothers went back to Yosef, the father, Yaakov Avinu, told him to bring kesef mishnah k'chubi etchem, take twice as much money in case the price of wheat went up. So he called this commentary the kesef mishnah. So in the kesef mishnah that's printed on the side of the Rambam, in the opening chapter of Hilchas Mamrim, where the Rambam writes, the Rambam says the Bezen HaGadol in Yerushalayim, their function is to transmit the Torah Shebal Peh. And all Shailas, they are the ultimate poskim on all issues of Torah Shebal Peh. And whenever there's a dispute, you have to subject it to them, and whatever they paskim goes. And then he says the Bezen in every generation has a right to paskim the way they see fit, and they're not restricted with this principle of Gadol B'chokhmah V'minyan, and Luchal HaShofet Shebiyamecho, and every generation they have to paskim. And he quotes the Lashon from the Gemara, Yiftach Bedoro, Kishmul Bedoro. Yiftach in his generation, even though Yiftach knows that he's not such a great, is not as great a Talmid Chacham as Shmuel, but still Yiftach Bedoro, Kishmul Bedoro. In Yiddish, they used to have a Yiddish, Yiddish folklore is very rich. They really ought to have a course in all the colleges on Yiddish folklore, something like, something separate from Torah, really something rich. So they had, in Yiddish, they used to have a comment, yes, Yiftach Bedor, Kishmul Bedor, but as the Pasuk says, Yiftach Ishbar, Yiftach Tane Zayn Kembur, it can't be an Amharetz. Yiftach is entitled to an opinion provided that it's not an Ishbar. They used to quote that as a Melitza, the Pasuk in Chumash in Parshas Mishpatim says, Yiftach Ishbar, if someone digs, if someone opens up a manhole in the middle of the street, someone else falls in, so the one opened up, took off the lid, is obligated to pay. So in Yiddish, they used to say, Yiftach Ishbar, is Yiftach an Ishbar? He has to be a Talmid Chacham. He has to be one who's entitled to an opinion. That's what Rav Moshe said. Maybe you think I'm not entitled to an opinion, but if one thinks that I am entitled, and he thought that he was entitled to me, then he has a right to disagree with the Nodi Bihud and with the Chassam Sofer as well. We're going to have to work on that too. So here the Kesef Mishnah, that's a very good question. So here the Kesef Mishnah poses a question. It's very common in the Talmud when you study Gemara, the Amoraim who lived after the period of Taraim, and Amora makes a statement. He says, I think the din is like this. Then the Gemara says, how can you say that? But there's a Mishnah that says the contrary. So the Gemara says, you're right, he made a mistake. So why is he right that he made a mistake? If every rabbi in every generation is entitled to his own opinion, you can disagree with even those who came in an earlier generation who are greater than you. So say, I disagree. What's the big tzimis? What does the Gemara always make a tiyufta? Obgefreg. How can Shmuel say this? How can Rabbi Yochanan say this? How can Rabbina say this? It's against the Mishnah. So he says, it's against the Mishnah. That's exactly what it says in Shulchan Aruch. Rav Moshe Feinstein is allowed to disagree with the Chasam Sofer, and the Ramor can disagree with the Gaonim. If everybody can disagree with everybody else who preceded them, so why can't the Amoraim disagree with the Tanoim? What's wrong? So the Kesef Mishnah, in his commentary on the side of the Rambam, poses this question. It says almost on every page in the Talmud that it's always assumed that the Amoraim can't disagree with the Tanoim. Why not? So he says, no, that's not so. Not that they can't disagree. Their practice was that they wouldn't disagree. If they'd see that all the Tanoim say in one direction, they're not going to take it upon themselves to disagree. If they'll find a dispute among the Tanoim, even if it's only a minority opinion held one way and the majority held the other way, so then they would feel comfortable to say, I think the minority are right, and I think we should pass like the minority. But if they're going to find all the Tanoim, everybody disagrees, even though, strictly speaking, al pi halacha, they still have the right to disagree, but they wouldn't do it. Sometimes you find in the Gemara that they did do it, that they took on all the Tanoim, and we paskin like the Amoraim. There is no principle that you cannot paskin like the Amoraim when they disagree with the Tanoim. This in the yeshiva is famous from Rabbi Chanan Wasserman. Rabbi Chanan Wasserman Rabbi Chanan Wasserman had a yeshiva in Baranovich. He was killed by the Nazis in the Second World War. And he was a student of Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik. So some of his students wrote up the shiurim that he gave. So on the end of Bava Basra, in the shiurim, the collection of shiurim that they have, so they quote a very humorous kasha that he asked his Rebbe, Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik, and the answer that Rabbi Chaim gave. Very bland answer. So he asked a fancy kasha that when you study Gemara Ksubis, in the beginning of Ksubis, the Gemara has a statement that Rav was an Amora, Rav, Shmuel, Rabbi Yechon were the first generation of Amoraim. Rav, Tanuhu, Palik. Rav has a right to disagree with the Tanoim. The other Amoraim have no right to disagree with Tanoim. Rav has the right to. So this appears in the Gemara in several places. But there in the beginning of Ksubis, Tosis points out, if you read the Gemara carefully, you'll realize that Rabbi Yochanan holds that it's not right. Rabbi Yochanan holds that Rav, they were all contemporaries. They all learned by Rabbi Yehuda Anasi. Rabbi Yehuda Anasi was the last of the period of the Tanoim. So Rabbi Yochanan was of the opinion that Rav had no right to disagree with the Tanoim. Okay, that's what Tosis points out when you read the Gemara. Then we have a rule in the Gemara, in Ye'erevin, and whenever there's a dispute between Rabbi Yochanan and Rav, we pass him like Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Chanan Vassman asked his Rebbe, Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik, whenever the dispute between Rabbi Yochanan and a Rav, we pass on like Rabbi Yochanan holds that Rav had no right to disagree with the Tanoim, but every time the Gemara quotes Rav as disagreeing with all the Tanoim, and they say, Rav Tanahu Palak, Rav has the right to disagree, we do pass on like Rav. So he says, how can we pass on like Rav? But if Rabbi Yochanan says he had no right to disagree, he's not a Tana, so how can we pass on like Rav? That was the kasha that he asked Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik. So Rabbi Chaim said, so he's not a Tana, so he's an Amora. An Amora has a right to disagree with Tanoim also. And then Rabbi Chana shows different Gemaras where you have the Amoraim disagreed with all the Tanoim, and we paskin like the Amoraim. Generally speaking, when you paskin a Shaila, you don't have to be 100% convinced that this is the Aloch. If you have a slight Natiyas Adas, you think that it's more correct this way, so you're entitled to paskin like that. Unless indeed in the Foshis, you can't give a person a death penalty based on a slight Natiyas Adas. That's how the Gemara says. But in all other areas of halacha, aside from dinin nefashis, you can paskin based on a slight. That's also in Shulchan Aruch. It says like that in Shulchan Aruch. A chacham can paskin based on a slight netiyas adas. So when the Amoraim developed their opinions based on a slight netiyas adas, and then they would show them, hey, what are you talking about? All the Tanaim disagree. Says, okay, back out. I can see the other opinion also. It's not that it's absolutely like this. But what if an Amora says an opinion, says that he absolutely can't see the other way at all? And you show him that all the Tanoim disagree. He says, I don't care all the Tanoim disagree. It's just impossible. It doesn't make any sense at all. So then he always had the right to disagree with the Tanoim. And if he's so convinced that he's right, then he has to follow his conscience in paskin against all the Tanoim. That's the way it says in the Kesef Mishnah in his commentary on the Rambam. So the question is, we'll have to start with this next one. So the question is, how come today we can't disagree with the Talmud? Let's say it says something in the Gemara. And we think that we have a better approach to understanding the nature of this din. So why do we say that the halacha was frozen in the days of the Talmud? So the Ramah and Shulchan Aruch speaks about this. So Chashmish, but Simen Chafei. And the Vilna Gaon has a comment there. So we'll be there next week. We'll have to begin with that topic.